1967, William Elizabeth Flint, sitters Mrs. Green and Mr. Woods.
Thank you very much.
Is it Wood or Woods?
How are you, George?
Oh, very well, thank you, Ricky.
Good.
Very nice to hear you come through.
Yes.
Where are you going for Christmas?
What a good question.
What did you say, Ricky?
Where are you going for Christmas?
Same foot, I expect.
Are you?
Another 2 months, yes. Three months, yes.
What a question, where are you going for Christmas?
We don't have Christmas Day, do we? Although I heard of some Christmas carols.
That's because it because you came down to the earth.
Good morning.
Very quiet, isn't it?
How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Very pleased you've come through. Hello, friend. I can hear you quite well. Oh, yes?
Yes, friend.
Yes?
Mr. Woods.
Yes? I can hear you, friend.
It is?
Yes.
Yeah.
I thought I heard some.
There's whispering going on just then.
How did you know?
Hello?
Hello? That's not very often it's possible, this sort of thing, is it?
Yes?
I suppose from there and again, you know, you get an opportunity to come and talk like, but it's not a common occurrence, is it?
Who are you speaking, friend?
What is your name, sis?
Wouldn't do.
Hmm?
I suppose it wouldn't do, would it?
Why not?
Hello.
I mean, I shall bet you know. I heard about this when I was on your side, but I never took it too much to heart. Thought it might be possible, but thought it was best to do it alone.
Oh?
Yeah.
Well, can't you come and talk to us and give us a talk?
My sister, she was very interested in this. She used to talk to me about it, but I was interested, but a bit scared, I suppose. You know, wasn't that keen to go into it. My sister, she used to say, she used to get in touch with Mum, you know, and I used to say, well, you know, probably you're right. You say so, I believe it, you know.
Yeah.
But she was always at a spirit meeting. She was always getting messages from Mother, because we all We were very close family, you know.
Yeah.
And my sister, she nursed Mother up to the end, you know.
Yeah.
And I never got married. I lived at home, but, you know, between us, we took care of Mum. You know, Dad went when we was all quite youngsters. Mother was a worker, if ever there was one. Of course, I'm with my sister and my mother now. We're all over now, you see. My younger brother, he got killed. Oh, long time ago, must be way back, 1912, something like that. Got killed by a van.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We're all in there, my mother, my sister, Bess, you know, Bessie, we all school.
What is your name?
Yeah, because she used to tell me about spiritualistic meetings, and I thought, wow, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, my talking to you, don't know quite well. I don't even really know why I got it, how I got it, when you come to think about it.
Can you give us your name?
But she was always the one for it. She still goes round the churches. Don't know what she does that for. Can't see much point. There's nobody on earth that, as far as I'm concerned, I'd like to get in touch with her. No, as far as I can see, there's anyone she wants to get in touch with. But she gets a great kick out of it, you know. She's a proper one for launching the spiritualist churches. She persuaded me to come here. She told me about this, you know, being able to speak. I said, well, let's have a go at anything, you know. Yeah, I heard a bit about you from my sister. She knows everything that goes on. She's a proper one. She always was, you know. Mother was interested. She used to have little sittings, as you call them, at home. They used to sit together with a table. Used to scare the bugger daylight out of me. I was never very keen about it myself. It was a bit windy. It always was, you know. That's why I never got married, you know. I think, really, looking back on it, it's always a quiet sort. Never sort of pushing and all that. I was quite happy. I had my own interests and my own room, you know, when we was all together, and I didn't go around much. I used to go out occasionally. Going back a bit in the years, of course, you know a lot about it, I suppose, being regular to all this sort of thing.
Yeah,
my sister persuaded me to come here today. She said, let's go down and see, you know, this voice business, you know, she called it.
Yeah.
I said, well, I wasn't that keen, but she persuaded me, so here I am.
Well, Frank, can you tell us your reactions when you found yourself on the other side? What sort of...
Me?
Yes.
Oh. Well, I suppose in a kind of subconscious way, you might say, what my sister used to tell me. My mother was interested, and there was always books lying around about spirits and all that luck, and one or two of them, and they persuaded me to read, and I suppose in a way that helped me when I came over. But then again, I don't know that I needed much help in a way. I don't mean to be bumptious about it, but I don't know. I lived a pretty decent sort of life. I never went out drinking with the boys, and I didn't smoke, and I didn't go after the women, and I lived a quiet, happy sort of existence, and I suppose subconsciously what they told me helped. Oh, no, when I came over here, my mother was waiting for me, actually. I always remember the way, you know, when I passed over, as you call it, died and all that. I was in hospital, and several days before I died, my mother was constantly beside my bed. My sister, she used to come and visit me, and I told her, I said, you know what you told me about the spirits and all that? I said, you and Mum, I think, must have been right, because I've seen Mother many times since I've been in here. And I said, I suppose I've had it. You know, I think I knew, well, in fact, I know I knew deep down inside me I couldn't have much longer. My sister never told me the truth, but I realised it myself that I couldn't go on, you know. And, she came in, regular, my sister, naturally, and, of course, now she's joined us, so, as I said, we're all together. But I often saw Mother standing beside the bed, just as I'd known her, you know, in the old days, only looking younger and... Oh, so lively. Mother was more or less up to the end. Then she suddenly had a decline, you might say, you know, and things were a bit hard for her, but oh, I always remember Mother's death, you know.
What happened to you? What did you do when you found yourself?
I just went with Mother. She says, come on, boy. She says, you're out of it now. Just like that, you know. Oh, well, actually, I suppose, really, I was only young, 57. And I wasn't that keen to come over, but anyway, Mother met me, and she was in the hospital when I had this operation. I knew jolly well that, I thought I might come out of it, but I didn't have much hope. I think I knew inside, deep inside, I was done for, you know. Anyway, Mother was there, and she said, come on, boy, she said, you've had it. So we just walked out of the hospital. Remember it as well, you know, walking down that ward, and I could see all these other chaps there, you know. Broke next to me had gone about 3 or 4 days before he'd had his basin full, and I remember getting to the end of the ward, and there he was. I thought, well, this is odd, because he died 3 days ago, 4 days ago. And then it suddenly dawned on me, of course, you know, what I'd been told and read, and then Mother was there with me, and there was this bloke. He says, I thought I'd come and meet you, because I knew you was about due to come out. He says, you're out of it. He says, don't to worry about it. He says, I've been standing around this ward, he says, this last 3 or 4 days. He says, but, he says, no, he says, I think I'll get out of it. He says, no, it's putting hang around here. He says, you let your mum? He says, yes. So the funny thing is, I can hear myself talking and hear him talking. My mother was smiling and talking, and it seemed all of a sudden, as I got outside the hospital ward, as you know, I'm going along the corridor, it looks at me as if this corridor had changed. Not that I remembered much about it, it's true, but he looked different. He looked as if it was light and bright, and all of a sudden it seemed as if the whole place had become vaulted like a cathedral. Funny feeling that was, you know, because it was rather, I thought, dark and dismal when I went in, and I thought, well, that's probably due to my condition, you know, depression, and the going into hospital and all that, and there was dark green paint, and all very depressing, and there it was, as I was getting out the door with my mother, and there's their chap, and it seemed as if somehow, although I didn't see at the time, there's hundreds of people behind me, and it was a peculiar sensation. I sensed them and didn't see them, and as I was moving along this corridor, it all seemed to change from this dark, dismal sort of corridor like, and it was as if it became high and vaulty, like you see in a beautiful cathedral, but instead of being depressing like some cathedrals now are, you know, it was all bright and colourful, and it was all as if it had been done up, painted and bright and illuminated, and oh, it was gorgeous. And I thought, well, I don't know, I was thinking this to myself, this is most peculiar. And then it's as if we came to the end of this long sort of, well, corridor, which had transformed itself, you might say, into this beautiful sort of place. And right at the end was enormous doors, but they were open, and I could see the sun shining outside, and I thought, oh, I'm out of all this, you know, it's marvellous, you know, no more aches and pains, no more lying in that bed, no more operations, and I was thinking, and my mother was smiling, and I could hear music in the distance. It was marvellous. It was like a cathedral, you know, wonderful sounds, but not an organ as such, and yet there was a sound of an organ, but as if there was a great big orchestra, and beautiful it was. It wasn't dismal and dreary like church music. It was all bright and lively. Not jazz, I don't mean that, but wonderful sort of, wonderful sound. Anyway, I went with them right to the end, and these doors, as I say, was open, and it's just as if I was walking into the most beautiful, well, countryside, and yet there was a sort of path as you went out the door, and down some steps, and there's this beautiful sort of road lined with beautiful trees, and there's the most beautiful sort of feeling of lightness and colour. Everywhere you looked, it seemed as if nature was running riot, you might say. Birds were twittering, and I could see in the far distance what looked like beautiful sort of golden sort of haze. And I thought, well, this is like some sort of dream, you know. Anyway, we walked along this here road, if you can call it a road. It was not like a made-up road, and yet it was, as though, I know this sounds daft thinking about it now, like a sort of silver strip, I don't know how to describe it, as if the ground was sort of silver, and it had a gleam to it, you know, and everything seemed so sort of light, and I noticed too that my footsteps didn't make no noise. And that suddenly dawned on me, what am I wearing? Because I was in hospital in Chalmers, you know, I thought, what am I got on? And I looked down and I got a suit on, and it was the suit that I'd had. Oh, I think I'd had that suit, must be 24, 5 years, and I didn't wear it very much, only Sundays most times. And there I was dressed in this suit, this blue suit it was, dark blue, very good suit it was, I paid quite a bit for it, I remember that. And there I was dressed in that suit, and my shoes were shining, and that's what struck me. I thought, well, that's funny, these shoes, you know, on the road, they should make a noise, but I didn't. And I felt so light and airy, you know, and there was my mother, she was just, well, she always was, she was looking so bright, and I noticed she got a nice pair of shoes on, and the funny thing struck me, I know it's a silly thing, but I thought, well, that's funny, there should be an echo, should be noise, you know, shoes on the road, but no, on the sound. But I could hear this beautiful music, and I thought, well, that drowns any sound, I suppose. But I realised afterwards, of course, that the only sounds that we have here are what are created by people's thoughts, and it was the beauty of the real, you know, it was the whole atmosphere was created by the thoughts of innumerable people. I told you about this crowd, as I didn't see at the time, but there's all these people who'd come, as it were, to welcome me. But you'd have thought they'd have been in front, but this anyway, they weren't. They were all behind. I sensed them. And eventually I realized, of course, there were all these people. But only they were standing at some distance, so that Mum and me, you know, particularly, would be able to be together, and probably, you know, I suppose they thought I didn't want to intrude too much, but there was such a lot of beautiful sound and music. Anyway, we went along this road, and very odd, although it looked as if there was great distance, and no doubt there was, it seemed in no time we reached what appeared to be top of a hill. And then looking right down, I could see spread out before me a most beautiful city. Well, it was just as if it was made. Well, I'd read in books years ago when I was a nipper about a beautiful city, and I think it was in Pilgrim's Progress. But anyway, I think it was. But it was just what looked like a beautiful city, and everything seemed to be gleaming white. And yet, although one knew it was all sort of gleaming white like marble, it wasn't marble, I realised that afterwards, but it looked as if the sun's rays, and there again, I didn't see the sun, but I saw the rays of light that seemed to give it a sort of look. All the buildings looked as if they were, well, like shell. All the soft, lovely colours you often see in a seashell, you know, pale pinks and blues and greens and mauves. It was most beautiful how the light seemed to play on this place, you see. And although I felt, or sensed, if you like, that the buildings were white, there was all this soft tinting colour from the rays of whatever it was. I presumed at the time it was the sun, but I since discovered it isn't the sun at all anyway. It's as if the whole place was brought into beautiful light with beautiful colourings by the rays of this, well, sun, I say. Anyway, we went down the slope of this hill, and all these people behind, and though I didn't see them up to the time I reached what were the, presumably, I suppose one might say, the outskirts of the city, I could see in the foreground then, as we seemed to approach, a whole number of people. There were people on horseback, and there was people walking, and it seemed as if there was a big sort of, well, I suppose you'd say, a sort of celebration. Mind you, I never started, it never struck me at all at the time there's anything to do with me. In a sense, I just thought I was, you know, arriving this place when they got some sort of big sort of do on, you know. And what was extraordinary was, I thought anyway, all these magnificent horses, beautiful creatures, and there was people dressed in all sorts of costumes. As I say, it looked like some great historical pageant, because a lot of the costumes some of them were wearing were magnificent, looked as if they were made of rich velvets and beautiful colourings and silks and all sorts of men and women and children. And I couldn't help feeling that I was entering into some sort of special affair that was probably being arranged or had been arranged, and I happened to arrive at the right moment, you might say. But as they drew near to me, I could see that it wasn't quite what I anticipated, that these were people who had died, I found out afterwards that, but who died years, some of them ago, centuries ago, some of them, and who were dressed according to their thoughts, according to their ideas, and that they were doing this deliberately, not only to welcome me, but to welcome many other people, the people that I hadn't seen, who were in the background behind me, also come over at the same time. And they had arrayed themselves by their thought force in various costumes according to their past lives, and they were doing this to add colour and to add some excitement and to bring some sort of special feeling, I suppose, to the occasion. And of course there were, as I've seen, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of other people. Some were dressed in ordinary clothes, others had long robes on, some looked like Egyptians, some looked like Chinese. There seemed to be as if they were all nations and of all ages, and they'd all sort of come towards us to welcome us. And of course, I found out that not only me, but there were literally thousands of other people, and there was a great rejoicing, and there was a great sound of music that seemed to swell up, and then there were people who came out of the crowd from the great city, you might say, who obviously were connected or related to people. And I could see my father, he was there, and you know, funny because I can laugh at it now. I never thought of ever seeing my father dressed like this, but he was dressed in what looked to me like a priest's habit, a sort of rogue thing, like a cassock thing, you know, and he looked real dinky-dory. I mean, he really did. I thought, well, actually, I couldn't suppress a smile because I thought, well, because mind you, there again, I know my father was always on the religious side. Mother always used to say to me, she said, you know, your father would have made a damn good priest, because he was always keen on religion. He was always keen on the church, and if he'd have come from a wealthy family, probably they'd have put him into the priesthood, you know, because he always had a thing about church. And I remember at home there were dozens and dozens and dozens of books on religion and sermons, and actually my mother got browned off with all that, you know. She used to say to me, oh, of course your father, bless him, is a good sort, but he'd been better off in a monastery, because, you know, she used to get a bit fed up with it. In fact, I think that's what turned her to spiritualism, because he was always on the preaching lark, and he did a bit of lay preaching. Anyway, there he was, dressed stuff like this beautiful sort of robe on, and he came forward, and of course this makes you laugh, I suppose, but Mother and him got on all right, but they weren't ideally mated, you know. Anyway, I hardly barely remember him. Anyway, she said, I knew who it was from pictures, photos I'd seen of that, and of course I suppose in their life I've sensed it was him. He came forward and put his arms round me and gave me a blessing. And oh, it was quite something, I tell you. But I discovered afterwards that neither he nor mother were together. There's no reflection on either of them. I mean, he's a good soul. He does wonderful work, my father. Goes down into the lower spheres, they tell me, and helps the people down there. He's a good man. But, of course, he still clings only to some of the old ideas, you know. But anyway, as I say, there are all these people, all different types, you know. And what I found was a great joy and beauty to me is they don't necessarily all think the same. Now, I always used to say to my sister when she came back from the spook meetings, I said, you know, all that's all very nice and all that. I said, but I wouldn't want to sort of be where everyone thinks alike, you know, all think the same. And I mean, on certain things, that's all right. But if you can't have a little discussion or a little argument occasionally and difference of opinion, life would become intolerable. Because she used to laugh at me and pull my leg a bit and argue and all that. But I discovered, much to my satisfaction, that although everybody lives in complete love and in complete harmony over here, it doesn't alter the fact that they have their little differences of thought and idea, and that makes for variety and makes for interest, and it makes for many things which I think are very important to one's personal happiness. I mean, there are no fundamental arguments or disputes or anything like that. Everyone is living according to their own conscience, according to their own way of life, but they all stick together on fundamental truths, you might say. But that's what made it all so marvellous. The variety of costume, the variety of dress, the variety of opinion and outlook, the variety of buildings. Oh, I soon discovered that the buildings were so varied. There were great, enormous palaces, and there were smaller places. There were all sorts of architecture and design, and the colourings were fabulous, the materials were marvellous. And it seems that some people like to live in one way, and some like to live in another. And, of course, I soon began to realize that this particular place in which I had arrived at was really only one of millions, you might say, evidently, of similar places on different levels. And there again, you have greater variety still because of the differences of people's thoughts and ideas according to their development, or as you might say, or your leg on it. Oh, I think it's absolutely marvellous when you think about it, that we're not tied down to one narrow-minded outlook. Just because we're dead, we're not all sort of floating around and sort of being religious and all trying to be sort of, well, you know how it is, you know, the old orthodox idea. Of course, my father, he got away from that too, bless his heart, to a great extent. But he still clings to certain things. But it's marvellous, you know. No one need worry about dying. It's the most marvellous thing. I mean, you don't, naturally, when you're on Earth, you can't help having a certain amount of fear about the actual dying itself, I suppose. But the reaction that you have afterwards and the excitement and the thrill and the marvels and the wonders of it all, you know, it's the most marvellous thing. It's the thing everyone should be looking forward to, not dreading.
What are you doing now, friend, on that side? What are you...
Oh, well, I'm very interested in architecture. I'm very interested in... I always was one from the ants.
Oh.
You know, I was always keen on... I was a carpenter, by the way, and I was always very keen on making things. A lot of the things in our home, you know, what I made. Oh, many bits and pieces. Her mother used to treasure because I'd made them when I was a boy. I always had the gift, you know. Anyway, over here, I'm very happy working in that way, and I'm very creative, and I make furniture. Personally, I love making furniture. We have wood here. People think that we live in a wishy-washy world. I suppose where you think what you want, there it is. There's a certain amount of thought which is predominant, and behind everything there must be thought before it can come into being. But it doesn't always affect that you have to still have to create and work for something. It isn't suddenly putting your hands, you might say. I love to work, and there are many forms of wood that we can use. I mean, we have all sorts of trees, and now, of course, you get the idea that we cut down the trees and we make things. Well, that's all right, because nature gives, as it were, willingly. But as soon as something is cut down, another tree grows in its place, it's automatic.
Do you have machinery there at all, cut them with a hand?
No, cool, no self-respecting man who took pride in his work would use machines. No.
How do you cut the wood then?
You cut the wood by hard labour, you call it, but you don't sense of, have no sense of hard labour, and that's another thing. You never feel fatigued or tired, and you can cut down a tree with what you would call an axe, which is a replica, but it's, you see, the point is here, this is a world of reality, but it's fundamentally a world of mind. And as you think you are, and as you think you need, so you have. Accordingly, you create it and you make it possible. But I love to create beautiful things, and that is nature's way of giving everything to man, giving of itself. We're always giving. We all give to each other. We all are part and parcel of each other. And it's a great joy to be creative. No one need worry about what they might do when they get here. There'll always be something of interest for them to take up or do. No one need worry about dying. It's a great thing to die.
Have you got to make a bit of
furniture?
How do you sort of make the shape of it? Cut it together without... Do you have sort of...
Tools? Of course we have tools.
Sir, can I go somewhere, please?